G'day, thanks for listening. Pete Murray's on the show today, and before we get to Pete, I might need to play an ad because this podcast is free for you to listen to, but it's not free to make. Rachel Barrett, my EP, and Andy Maher, my audio director, they all need money to do the magic work they do. So if you hear an ad, thank you. If you don't hear an ad, here's Pete.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This little bar, that, I don't know, maybe held a couple hundred people and took the guitar in. So I'd like to try and see if I can get some work. And she said, yeah, great, we're just about to have some lunch. So why don't you jump up there and play a few songs? Okay. I like played three songs, and by the end of the third one, she said, great. She said, can you start this Friday? And I'm like, sure. And that's when I started like shitting myself. That was like, holy shit, like I've got to play this to now a crowd of, you know, people. And I remember driving in on Friday night, petrified. And I got halfway down, I stopped and turned around and started driving back home again. And I stopped the car. So just turn around and go and get this done.
That is singer and songwriter and dad to many, Pete Murray. And this is Better Than Yesterday. Hello and welcome to Better Than Yesterday. I'm Moshe Ginsberg. This is episode 390 of the show with Pete Murray, singer-songwriter Pete Murray. He's got a new EP out. It's called In the Night. More about Pete in a moment. Thanks for listening to the show. Thanks for the fabulous feedback about Hannah Carell. Wow. If you haven't gone back and had a listen to that, thanks heaps. You can email me, sandosheremail@gmail.com. Also, thanks to the people that reached out and mentioned that they too have been yelling at an inanimate object over the past week. That was Friday's show. That was all about that, particularly someone who got into a fight with an empty toilet roll. I can relate. My fight was with a suction cup. I hope you all learned something out of Friday. Yeah, it was interesting. Interesting. Thanks for the support about Idol Australians with James Matheson. We had another cracking episode this week with Peter Alexander. Yeah, it was great. It was really great. More about that a little later in the show. If you've never listened to this show before, this is your first time listening, hi. The show's called Better Than Yesterday. Hopefully something you hear, in fact, definitely something you hear today will help you make today better than yesterday. I've been here every week since 2013. Every Monday I'm here with a guest. Every Friday I'm here with you. And you can find me, sendosheremail@gmail.com. My name's Osher Ginsberg. I'm a TV host. I'm a dad. I'm a bicycle rider while the baby's asleep. I'm going to go for a drive in the rain because we can't go to the park, but the baby wants to get out of the house. So we went and looked at boats kind of guy. And I'm at your service. Thank you for being you. I'm really grateful that you listen. And thanks for everyone that's been filling out the survey, which you'll find a link to in the show notes. That has really helped. I'm learning a lot and I'm really grateful for the feedback and I hope to implement some of the changes that you're suggesting into the show as we go along, because I just want to make a show you want to listen to, and I really appreciate that. So you can find the link to that survey where you can even win a $100 gift card in the show notes. Yeah. All right, let's get on with this. Let me tell you about my guest today. Pete Murray is a singer and songwriter originally from Brisbane, and he's now based in the Northern Rivers of New South Wales. He's a Brisbane boy. He's also a dad. He recently became a dad to four. He spoke in our conversation about being moments away from expecting a new baby, and the new little girl arrived only a couple of days ago. Baby number four. Congratulations to Pete, and congratulations to everyone. That's beautiful. He's an incredible dad. I think I really got that out of this conversation, is how good a dad he is, and how his own relationship with his father framed his relationship with his kids. It's really cool, really cool, this chat. He's got a new EP. It's called The Night. This is a cracking story. It's wild, because we're nearly 400 episodes in. We've heard this story before from whoever it is, but the story is the same, even though the outcomes and the intentions are different. It's beautiful to hear it again. I mentioned this on Friday. It's beautiful to hear that there is a method to getting the things that you want to create in your life. And it's been repeated again and again and again by guests on this show. And here's another great example of how it works. Pete Murray will probably want a tour as soon as he's allowed to tour. So go and check him out. He's Pete Murray Music on Instagram. He's also just PeteMurray.com. That's where you can find him. Like I said, his new EP is called The Night. There's a link to it in the show notes. Enjoy this conversation with Pete Murray. Look, I'm grateful to have you on the show today, Pete. Thanks for being a part of it. Thanks for having this conversation. It's always nice to speak to another person who, I guess, before it is what it is now, reached escape velocity from Brisbane, which is a place that we both came from. And it's hard to describe to people what Brisbane was like growing up. I like to say that if you think the National Party is fun in federal government, try and imagine what it was like when they were running a whole state. What do you remember about what was going on?
Well, you know, I'm from Chinchilla. So I grew up in Chinchilla until I came to Nudgee for grade 11 and 12. So then, you know, grade 11, 12 through for that, the next decade I was in Brisbane until I left to go to Melbourne. I was always keen to get out of Brisbane, but I just didn't know where to go, what to do. I always wanted to go to the coast and, you know, I wanted to get surfing and just have that lifestyle. Now I'm in Byron Bay, I've got that lifestyle. And that's what I was looking for years ago. But like, what do you do? How do you go to the coast? What's the job you do? And you kind of get stuck in the city, a bit wrong, I guess, until you find a way out. But, you know, I remember I've kind of got into music late too, and I remember talking to the Powderfinger Boards and, you know, the days that the state government, the Queensland government were quite brutal with the music industry and really had some strict rules on that and even just going out. You know, it was an interesting place to be, but I kind of missed all that stuff. I was into my sport. So, you know, for me, I was like into the athletics and rugby in the afternoon and, you know, go out to drink at the pub or whatever. But, you know, I didn't notice the, you know, on the music side of things, what was going on. But talk to Powderfinger Boys, that's a few stories.
I haven't spoken to those guys since the Channel V days, but besides the odd backstage beverage at Splendor, I haven't seen them in a little while. What do you remember about, for folks who don't know where Chinchilla is, can you kind of describe what kind of place it is?
Yeah, Chinchilla's, it was a small country town. You know, when I grew up there, it was like 4,000 people, I guess, maybe 6,000 in the whole local district. It's farming land. Everything's there pretty much. There's also fruit. It's famous now for watermelons. They have a watermelon festival there. They've been doing that for years. So it's basically anything with the land, that's what it is. So my dad was a watchmaker jeweler. So I lived in town and all my cousins were on the property. They were truck drivers and had cattle and stuff like that. So Chinchilla's 4 hours drive west from Brisbane. You go through Toowoomba, Dalby, and then Chinchilla. And the drive from Dalby to Chinchilla, you pretty much do it with your eyes closed. It's a straight road, about 25 minutes drive, then a slight little right bend. Keep going for about another 25 minutes, and then it's a little left bend. And keep going for another 25 minutes, and then you're in Chinchilla. So you pretty much do that. It was the most boring drive for me every time we come back, you know, back home. So
what was it like as a kid then to go to do grade 11 and 12 in the city?
Exciting. Yeah, I asked to go. My parents were threatening me in grade 8 because I was quite lazy or laid back, whatever you want to call it. You know, with school, I had a mate that we used to kind of muck around quite a bit. So I was happy just to kind of get through school and get a pass. You know, I never tried hard at it. So And they always threatened, you know, we're going to send you away to boarding school. I was like, I don't want to go to boarding school. I'm happy here. For me, the sporting opportunities, and I think also just even the education, was the opportunities to go away and learn more and to compete in a greater level with sportsmen, you know, to get to that level and compete was exciting for me. So to go away from Chinchilla, I think I got tired of it when I became a teenager and you're wanting more. So to go to Nudge in grade 11, 12 was a massive step. You know, I was good at sport. I remember going and I made the first rugby team, which was incredible there, as you would be aware of from Terrace as well. You know, the rugby is everything at those schools. You know, it's like it's kind of too much. I didn't understand how big it was. But to be there at a troll game, you know, we had like a couple of thousand people there. And I want my first game. And I remember Chinchilla, we had 50 parents at a game. That was a pretty big crowd, you know. So it was a massive step up to go to a school like that.
But that gave you a real drive, because sometimes as a teenage boy, there's so much going on inside your body that if you don't know where to aim that cannon, it can get, you know, there can be some collateral damage. Did that give you some focus at least?
Yeah, look, on a lot of levels, I had a lot more focus when I went to Nudge. I remember talking to a teacher at Chinchilla. Like, I was successful in my sport. I was successful in swimming, athletics and footy. So, you know, I was at national level on pretty much all those things. And so I remember talking to this teacher who said to me, are you sure you want to go away to school? Because, like, wouldn't you rather be a big fish in a little pond than, you know, going to be a small fish in a big pond? And I went, well, isn't that the challenge? Don't you want to go and try and become a big fish in the big pond?
Whoa, I can't believe he said that to you.
I think it's, you know, country teacher going, oh, mate, you just don't go away. Like, this is, what are you doing? Stay here. So for me, the excitement was to go away and try and do the best you could do. And even on the level of study, we had to go and study 3 hours a night back then. There was no muck around. So suddenly my grades just bumped up as well. And so, you know, for me, you're just doing so much better on all levels, in the studies and on the sporting field. It was just such a big boost coming from a place like Chinchilla. Yeah, it was exciting.
I remember what it was like. We went to very, very similar schools. And I remember there was a lot of pressure. We were kind of the future lawyers and doctors and, you know, I guess politicians or policymakers of the community. And there was a lot of pressure to go into university and a lot of path that way.
Did you feel that pressure personally yourself?
And when I didn't make it, I felt fucking useless because I'd been told my whole couple of years of like, no, this is where you have to go and this is where you have to be. And when I didn't get into uni because I didn't do very well at school, I was like, well, I don't know what to do now because I was never told about anything else. There was never any pathway out of that. Was there pressure for you to go to uni?
It's very interesting you say that. I didn't feel the pressure, no, because I think I was just doing my own race. I was doing my own thing and I wasn't too concerned about that. All I wanted to do was just have a lifestyle and do a job that I loved. That was the main thing. I didn't, you know, for me, becoming a lawyer or even a doctor seemed like, God, it's a lot of time you're going to spend doing something that you don't want to do or treating people's problems, dealing with people's problems. And, you know, like for me, I didn't want to be locked in the one room for the rest of my life doing, you know, a job. So I remember talking to my dad about this when, you know, coming to the beginning of grade 12, what do you want to do? And I was a bit unsure still what I wanted to do, but I kind of really felt like I wanted to be traveling and getting around the world. What was the job that I wanted to do, you know? I was loved sport so much. I got into, started doing natural medicine, which I loved. That was something that interests me. You know, I could continue doing my sport. And then I thought, well, I'll start working with other sportsmen and women when I finish. And I started doing a little bit of work with some physios as well. But then I was going back to the same place every day and I was kind of indoors and I felt really trapped. Like, this is not what I want to do. So I bet you I went overseas for a while and sort of, you know, things fell into place. But at school, you know, I did find that those schools are a little bit like this in the way they think and the way that they want to educate you. And rather than going, hey, there's this, you can do anything you want. Don't just go, hey, this is what we're going to try and be, you know, a lawyer or a doctor or that sort of thing, you know. So there's just so many other avenues. I remember, like, music. I didn't do music at school. I did it after school. And I remember there's only a few guys that did music. And, you know, it just wasn't a big thing. It's kind of all the nerdy guys, you know what I mean? I was still friends with them, but they were kind of nerdy guys that would got into music and they're good. You know, I remember being very impressed. We had a grade 12 retreat, I think it was, and I remember these guys got up and jammed and I remember thinking, wow, like, how talented are these guys? I had nothing to do with music at all in my life.
Yeah, right.
remember seeing these guys play and jammed on a song or something. It's like, wow, incredible. I was blown away by that. You know, so definitely, and even having my kids, when I started to think about, do I send them to Nudgee? Because I love the tradition of what school is, but I thought it is a little bit like there's a certain way that people think there in those schools. And I think you don't have to go there to be successful. You can be successful in anything.
At our school, looking back on some of the things I found when I was cleaning up my house, I was like, wow, they really pushed that religion thing quite a bit, to a point where as an adult, I'm uncomfortable seeing the kind of language they were using and things like this. Do you remember, you know, that sort of thing at your school?
Yeah, look, it's Catholic school. The Catholic religion is they push hard with it. And I'm Catholic, but I'm not a practicing Catholic. You know, I struggled going to Mass, you know, on the odd occasion I'll go there. And I kind of thought to myself, there's a God there. You don't have to go to Mass every weekend to get into heaven or to, you know, to be a good person. So I have a little different, I guess I have a little bit of an alternative view on things, where I guess those schools are a little bit like threatening lines. It's what you've got to do. And, you know, with the Catholic religion. And that's just the way it is. I think that's the only way they know how to do it. So this is what happened, and this is what happened years ago, and this is where we are today, and this is what we have to do. It's like, okay, I don't think you have to do that. You know, I'm not sure if it happened exactly that way, but that's my opinion, you know.
Now you've been around the world, there's kids in your life, you've been up, you've been down, you've been up, you've been down. What's your view on it now? What's your view on, I don't know, spirituality and things like that now? Do you have one?
Yeah, I didn't send my boys to Nudgee. You know, I think that, like, not giving Nudgee a hard time, it's a great school. Great school for the right kids, but I think around this area there's some great schools, and the kids got a great base here for what they do there. I love the surfing element, having been close to the water. Spirituality now, you know, I believe that there's a spirit world when you pass on. I feel we just go straight from this life straight into the next one, into the spirit world. And you know, I had a friend of mine who was a clairvoyant, you know, and I remember going to see her one time, and she was saying things like, so you know, your dad's here, and he's mentioning things to me, and I'm like, you wouldn't know that. Like, how would you know that? And it was kind of interesting. So might be changed on the Catholic religion, I think, from where I started to get to know her and knowing that there is a spirit world there, and, you know, having a bit of communication. It might sound weird, but my view changed. And I remember saying to a friend of mine, you should go and see this lady, because both her parents have died. And I said, your view on death will change once you communicate with her. And I said, you probably more than likely communicate with your parents. And she did. She's like, yeah, unbelievable how my view on death has changed from what, you know, talking to this person, then communicate with spirits. Because there's plenty of things that, you know that's true, and you know that they can't make that stuff up. So it's weird, you know what I mean? I know that's for a lot of people going, Pete Murray's a wacko. You know?
No, I don't know. Like, I'm just like, that must have been intense. That must have been quite a powerful experience for you.
Yeah, it definitely was. I think so, you know, when that happens, like, I've never experienced that before, never even thought of that before. And then suddenly, you know, I've had times where, you know, you can kind of communicate a little bit, you know, with the dad who passed away near I finished school. So it's interesting to know that it's not quite exactly the same as what you've been taught as a kid.
Does that give you a sense of peace?
It does. Absolutely. Yeah. I don't fear death. You know, I think there was a time I did sort of, everyone fears death and dying. I'm way more relaxed about it now with what's going to happen down the track. Not that I'm wanting to leave anytime soon. I'd like to sort of remain here as long as I can and do the best I can. And, you know, about to have my fourth child, so I want to be around as long as I can. Because my dad died when he was 47 and I was 18, so I felt like it was a real loss for me in that time. And my goal is to be here for as long as I can for the kids.
I can't imagine what that would have been like. One of my best mates lost his dad when he was around that age. But let me ask you about, what was it like when you were 47? Did you stop and think about, oh, my goodness?
Yeah, and that was a really strange moment for me, you know, when you're reaching the age that your dad was. And I remember to the day I worked out how many days it was past his 47th birthday. And when I got to that time and passed it, it was weird that coming to that moment, I was about to be older than him. But I never felt like I was older than him. I always felt like he was still, you know, 20-odd years older than me. even though it wasn't, you know. And then now I've passed that time. It was a really strange moment. I remember just being, it was a really eerie kind of time for me, you know, for a few weeks when you got to that stage and you're older than your dad.
My God, I got goosebumps just thinking about it. I'm 47 now.
Way too young to die, isn't it? You know, so he had got a heart attack out of the blue, which really surprised us and didn't see it coming at all. So it was a sudden loss for the whole family and the community in Chinchilla. So for him.
And especially in a town of 4,000 people, well, my goodness, everyone would have known each other. And for you, what, I'm just doing maths, you would have been around 18?
I had just turned 18. So I basically went out in October. I turned 18, and we went out and took a couple of mates out to dinner in Brisbane. Mum and Dad came down, took us out, and the first time I had a couple of drinks with him, and we just felt like I was talking to him as an adult.
Yeah.
And then 2 months later, he was dead. And that was the thing for me that was really hard, so you know, that I had to kind of deal with that loss when you just don't feel like, oh, this guy's a great guy. And I've always thought he's a great guy, but I'm starting to know him better as an adult.
Mm.
That's the thing that really, really hit me. So it was tough.
I can't imagine what it would be like to not only try to come out into the world as an adult, but to try to do it without a father figure in your life. Those years must have been very difficult to try and find your place in the world. Did music become a part of that reimagining who you are as an adult?
I picked up a guitar when I was 21, 22, quite late. And, you know, Dad had died when I was 18. I felt for the next 5 years I struggled really quite a lot. And I didn't realise, but I was obviously going through a little bit of depression. When I got to about 20, I remember kind of, you know, waking up in the morning and you're sort of so tired, you didn't have breakfast and I'd have to go back to bed and sleep again. Then I'd wake up and I'd have lunch and I'd be so tired again, I'd go back and sleep again for the afternoon. And then I'd get up and I remember had football training, rugby. I was playing at Brothers that year and first year in A grade. And that's kind of the only thing I was really doing. I was just struggled with what, you know, I just didn't know what I wanted to do. And I think it all just came to a head. And that 12 months, I just really struggled. And I only reading later that, you know, what some of the signs of depression that you're tired, you know, you're always tired and you can't get going. And that year, I really struggled with the whole thing. I think not knowing what I wanted to do, not having Dad there to talk to, as you know, get some advice from a father, like what, just all sorts of things, you know, that's everyday life, what you're doing, becoming a man from 18 to, you know, early 20s, that wasn't there. And it was a really tough time. I'm not saying that, you know, losing your dad at any age or your mum is an easy thing, but for me, that's what was really difficult to know those years. And I remember it did take a long time to get out of it. Once I started to, you know, I started to get into natural medicine after that, and then I started finding my way a little bit more. You know, it was I went overseas for 12 months, and that was the real big thing that I went, wow, this is what life's about. You know, you go overseas and at that age, your whole world just opens up, you know, because we've kind of been in this little world. I've been in Chinchilla, which is this, and then Brisbane,
yeah,
which is this, you know, and that's it.
Tiny little boxes, yeah.
Yeah, and I remember just going, you know, this is just, I remember, I wanted to leave the place and going overseas. I didn't know how long I want to be, but that's when I started playing guitar a little bit. That's like before I went overseas. When I went overseas, I met buskers and I suddenly just got into this thing that I was loving, you know, playing music and learning how to play guitar. And my life started to really open up from then. But yeah, those early days of that period from 18 to 22 were a pretty tough time.
Once you discovered guitar, though, what was it about playing that you just didn't want to stop doing? Why did you not want to put it down? Why did you want to learn it?
You know, I think some guys just have the passion for it and some don't. And it was really hard to play at first. And my fingers were, you know, like, I remember the first lesson that I had. A good friend of mine, so I'll tell you this little story, which was really nice. I called Charlie Clark. I met him because I went back to Nudge's as a boarding supervisor and Charlie was there too. He was about 10 years older than me. And I met him and became really great mates. And he one day just came to my room and said, you know, I'm going to go get a guitar lesson. The boys want to play the guitar and I'm going to find him to do it. And I remember thinking, oh, that sounds pretty cool. Like I've never thought about that. But that sounds great. Maybe I might go and do the same thing. It turns out that I did. I got a couple of lessons and he never did. So a few years later, you know, I got the chance to get him around to my place and say, mate, come around, let's catch up. Because he was teaching at the Gold Coast and we kind of didn't see each other for a couple of years. And he is in Brisbane. I said, come around, I want to show you something. So I got the guitar out. We're big Neil Young fans. So I played a couple of Neil Young songs. And he was like, wow. I said, mate, it's because of you that I've started. And you'd saying that to me that day. That's the only reason why I picked this up. And then about 6 months later, he had an aneurysm and passed away too.
Oh, my God.
So and I was 22 and he was 32. And it was just this, you know, another major person in my life is gone. I named my first son Charlie after him. So, but, you know, like that's a really nice story for me because if it wasn't for that guy, I wouldn't be doing music. And I believed in, I believe in fate. And I believe I was meant to meet him and he was the reason why I picked up the guitar and got going. But the lessons, you know, the lessons I remember going to the first lesson and the guy who was teaching me kind of arrived 10 minutes late and had to leave 10 minutes early for, you know, sort of like 10 minutes with him. And he was, he said, look, what do you want to do? I said, I just want to play guitar and sing, I guess, you know, just simple stuff. He said, oh, great. Well, here you go. Here's a G and a C and a D chord. And I remember he played the Joker from Steve Miller, you know. And just said, try this. And he sort of passed it over to me. And that instant I'm going, obviously I should have picked something up then because I knew nothing about chords or anything on the guitar. And I said, look, can you show me that again? And he just did it, you know, G, G, C, C, D, D, G, G. Try that. And I was like, that moment I went, I can't do this. This is too hard. I should pick something up at that stage. And he said, do you know nothing about the guitar? I said, no, I don't even know how many strings are on it. No idea at all. So he was like, okay. And we started from the real basics, you know, and teaching the chords. So it was like trying to get these finger patterns that you're going, how do you do that? You know? But I just had this love for it. That once you started to play some of these old songs that you loved, you know, like Neil Young, Simon and Garfunkel, and the songs on the acoustic guitar, it's just like great, you know, and I just loved it. So for the next couple of years, I just was basically in my room, you know, playing and traveling around the world and just learning how to play and learning what to do, you know, and how to get better at it. So, and that's something that I was still looking for a job that would allow me to travel the world to get paid. I didn't know what that was and I didn't think it was music because music was just kind of fun for me and that was never going to be a serious thing. So for that to turn into a serious thing was just a kind of freaky thing that would happen.
It's one thing to learn covers and artists will pick up a brush and they will paint in the style of, or they will draw it with a pencil, they will draw in the style of because it's a style they recognize and you don't want to reinvent the wheel every time. But there's a point where you have to have the balls to go, you know what? No, this melody and this song that I have to sing in these words, they're worth me putting down. And some people never jump across that road and start having the balls basically to go, oh, no, I can write a song and what I have to say and sing is worth it. Do you remember when you first felt that?
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember I had a friend of mine say, listen, you should get a gig. You're getting really good at this and you should get paid for it. So I was like, okay, sure. So he said, I found a bar that you could go to. Dooley's Hotel, Tom's Place it's called. There's a little bar. They had the top pool room bar, and then there's a little bar down the bottom that, I don't know, maybe held a couple hundred people, and great little bar. So he said, go check that out. So I went in there, and Jan Dooley was there, and took the guitar and said, listen, I'd like to try and see if I can get some work. And she said, yeah, great, we're just about to have some lunch, so why don't you jump up there and play a few songs? Okay. I like played three songs, and by the end of the third one, she said, great, you're fantastic. And this was on Wednesday. She said, can you start this Friday? And I'm like, sure, you know. And that's when I started, like, shitting myself. That was like, holy shit, like I'm going to play this to now a crowd of, you know, people. And so I had to race home and try and find a PA and all this stuff that I had to try and work out, do it. And I remember driving in on Friday night petrified. And I got halfway down, I stopped and turned around and started driving back home again. I thought, I can't do it. I was just way too nervous, you know. I was like, I stopped the car. So just turn around and go in and get this done. So I went in and made the whole night of sweating, you know, it was just like this, I was petrified, didn't happen. I played there, did four sets, 45-minute sets, and it was a great vibe, you know. For the first 3 months I was there, every Friday night I was basically packing it and just like so nervous about the whole thing. And I got through that. And after a while, I thought, this is great. I could do this forever. But about 6 months into it, I remember thinking, this sucks. You know, you're playing to a bunch of drunks. And I don't know how many times I would be sitting there playing and the microphone would be accidentally bumped into my mouth. And I said, oh, you know, so you're kind of dealing with drunks. They want to hear all the same songs. And I thought, the only way that I'm going to be successful in this business is if I write my own songs. And that's the only way. So I remember the moment that I did that, and 6 months into that, and I went, I'm going to go home. And the Doolies were great because they gave me two gigs for a while there, Friday and Saturday night. So I was earning whatever, $500 a week. And I could survive off that. And I could go home. The rest of the week, I just started to, I remember going, I'm going to write songs. And I remember the first day I was at home trying to write a song. And I remember being so frustrated because I couldn't write a song. You know, it's like, how do you do this? This is a real challenge. But I persisted with it. So for 2 years, I sat at home and I wrote songs, and songs that came out, songs like So Beautiful, were written in that first year that I was writing songs, which was a big hit later on. And pretty much a lot of those songs made up the Feeler album, which was a big album that sort of opened everything for me. So that 2 years was a really successful time, even though I wasn't earning any money from it. But it was frustrating. But, you know, you have to spend the time. That's the thing that people don't want to do, because you've got to be persistent. Three things in the music business that you need to be successful: persistence, persistence, persistence. And that's what you have to do. And you've got to write, you've got to go, and you've got to knock on doors, try and get gigs. And so it's challenging, you know, and that's why people give up and can't do it, because it's very hard. When you record something, then the next level is you've got to try and play somewhere. Who's going to want to listen to you? And it's just, it's really hard, and you're broke, you've got no money. I remember moving to Melbourne from Brisbane to try and get things happening, because the Brisbane scene was doing quite well for me after a few years. But I needed to get away to get to a different audience, and Melbourne was the place to go for live music. And going there to make things happen was even, you know, that year was very challenging, probably the hardest year of my life, I think, with work, trying to make things happen. It was challenging. Once again, I think I might have fallen into a bit of depression or anxiety. I remember playing a game of soccer with some friends and I could hardly even breathe. I thought I was going to have a heart attack. But it was just anxiety. Not sleeping at night, you know, not wanting to go to bed at night, because I knew I'd wake up at 3 a.m. sweating, panicking. Mm. At that stage, I think I was 30 and I had nothing. No money. All my other mates were getting good jobs at that stage, don't have kids. I had nothing. So it was a really challenging time to be in that position.
I've been doing this podcast for a while now, but there's a few things you said there. It's not rocket surgery, because it's the same whether you work in real estate, you're an architect, you're a financial planner, you manage a household. It's just, you've got to be willing to just go out there and be not so great for a while. And you've got to take it in the face until you learn how to be really good. You can't just go, here I am, I really want to do this, and now can I please have all the money and adulation, please? No, I have to go and play 4 hours a night twice a week to a bunch of people with a skin full of Guinness who only want to hear that Bob Geldof song again, you know?
But, you know, if everyone had success straight away, it wouldn't last long, you know, because it's the journey of getting there. And you've got to really take it in. What it takes to get somewhere is really hard. You know, they say that, you know, it takes 10 years to be an overnight success. That's true. You know, it could take a very long time. But how rewarding is it when you actually do put the time and effort in and then suddenly you have the success? It's like, great. If I had success in the first week, I would probably have worked as hard.
Yeah.
And I might have lasted as long. So, I mean, the good thing with my career is it's been longevity. And that's from day one. I really want this longevity. And you've got to work hard for that. And I would say it's easy to have success, but it's definitely harder to maintain success once you've had it. And that's the thing that becomes really hard work. And you see the music business, you'll see so many acts and so many bands come in, be the flavour of the month, win all the arias, and then you'll never hear them.
Yeah.
It's really difficult to try and to hang around.
It's so wild to have seen the industry change so much in the time that I've even been in it. It works completely different economically to when you and I started. You know, you could still make money selling units. You could still make money. People bought a physical thing. They bought a widget. Now the widget's free. The only way you can make money is selling a ticket.
Yeah.
Pete, where do you sit on the monetary value that we place on music these days? Something that people will use every single day. It's a product people use every day of their lives. Yeah. Where do you sit on the value that we place on music at the moment?
Oh, it's very poor. Years ago, before the streaming sites, the streaming started happening, I remember sitting on a plane with another guy, I was 40-something, another mate of mine who I just happened to sit next to him, and I was trying to explain to him how the industry worked, and I had a girl who must have been like 19, and she was on the other side. So she, and this is the time when people were just downloading music for free. Remember that period? And
oh, they just stole it, like Napster or LimeWire or something, yeah.
Yeah, it was killing everybody. So, and I think this girl's opinion was, well, not I think, I know her opinion was the music should be free because she always got it for free from whenever she started doing music. Like, it's always been free. It should be free. And I said, why? Oh, it just should be. And I was like, okay, well, if you had a dress shop and I just came in and said, oh, I'm just going to take this dress and give it to my wife. You've got like 10 of the same color that are all being printed at the same place. I'm just going to take one of those. Thanks a lot. See you later. How would you feel about that? She said, oh, you can't do that. Why not? Well, it's my dress. I said, well, you know, we spend money recording music. It costs us money to do that. So you're taking it for free. It's the same thing. So I don't think people really understand. With the streaming now, it's changed. There is royalties come back, but it's not great. You know, you've got to have a million streams and I think you get about $6,000 or $7,000. So, you know, it's a lot. But then you've got, you know, record labels that with artists that will be claiming most of that stuff as well. So the artist really is the last person to get any money from it. So live touring is the only way you're going to make money, pretty much. You're pretty much guaranteed that that's where you make the money because no one's taking money. Other than agents and management and, you know, venues. So it's still the same thing. You're the last person that gets paid, but you're going to get you'll make money, or you should make money if you're smart about it. And that's what you've got to be, you know, I guess, smart in the business because it's a tough business.
Yeah,
I think the hardest business, you know, to try and be successful in is music.
Yeah, but it's a business where, you know, I mean, you know, I had a song play at my wedding and it's this 3 minutes of vibrating symmetrical air vibrations that every time I hear them, it makes my heart skip because I remember dancing with my wife in front of our friends on that day, you know, and that should be valued and it should be paid for. Though, where do you stand on, you know, kind of going back to, I guess, the older model of patrons to an artist, of something like whether it be Patreon or Twitch or something where people subscribe or Bandcamp? Where do you see that? Like, do you see that as a pathway or is that just kind of a pittance compared to what it really is worth?
Honestly, I don't know if you can even really compare it now. That's kind of, those days are gone, you know. But I think you've got to look to the future and what's going to happen and how you can keep moving ahead. Streaming is, like I said, there's a royalty there now, and artists can have success internationally now, where years ago without that it was very difficult because it was controlled by record labels and, you know, if you were, for example, was signed to Sony Australia, great label, you know, Dennis Hanlon, the boss of the company, great mates with Dennis, and they've been awesome for me in Australia, but not so great overseas. No one's wanted to release. It happens a lot with, you know, Aussie artists trying to get released overseas if you do a deal from Australia. It's very, very hard. But with streaming, you can get that opportunity to get out now, because back then if my music wasn't released, people couldn't buy it, couldn't get it on CD there, you just couldn't hear it, so that was it, you couldn't tour. Well, these days you can hear it, so that's, I guess, the positive of that. And you know, like I said, it comes down to your touring and your publishing. It's when you own the songs, and that's the thing that's really important, those two areas where you can make some money. It's hard these days because there's so much music out there. There's so much, there's good and bad, you know, and sometimes the bad's the most successful one, personally. Some of the stuff that I've heard is like, what is that, you know?
Yeah.
But it opens the door to everybody. And everybody, whether you're good or bad, you have a chance of having success. So the streaming stuff and the monetary value on that and who gets paid what, you know, it's a tricky one. It seems like Spotify, the company, they make good money. What they give out to the artists, I think, is not amazing and should be better. And that's probably something that probably should be looked at. But, you know, easier said than done.
Previously, like, the way you'd written songs was it was you by yourself. For the new EP that you put out, The Night, you did a lot of co-writing. How do you approach that? Something so personal as trying to communicate an emotion to a listener through a song. How did it feel to give some of that to somebody else and try to work with that person and connect with them to try and create the same message?
Yeah, first time doing that was pretty scary for me because, like I said, I've always done my own music. I've always taken my time to do what I need to do, you know. I mean, there's no pressure when you're sitting there in front of someone else who's another songwriter and they're good at their trade. You don't want to be the one that doesn't bring anything to the table. So it kind of makes – it pushes you to be good at what you're doing, to bring something that they can go, well, that's great, love this, you know. I found it easy to do that, but I was nervous, very nervous. The first co-writing session that I did, I pretty much wrote 99% of the song. I sat up the night before because I was so nervous I wasn't going to bring it to the table. I kind of wrote the music and I think I've got a song here, and I went in and kind of had an idea of what I wanted to sing about. So by the time we got in together, I said, look, I've got this song, and I played the whole thing, I had the musical there. And then I was so nervous I just basically started throwing the lyrics down, and while he was kind of working on the production side of things and recording it. And I remember at the end of it, I went, I'll just write 99% of that song and he's going to get 50%. So I kind of thought, next one, just kick back and let these guys bring something to me, not just give it all. So that's what I've always done. So the next session, I just went, I just sat there and I said, what have you got? You know, and then I said, what about this? You know, and so then we started really having a great collaboration on that, and you can let them bring part of their ideas and their feel to you, because it's, I seem to find most artists are the same. You'll probably find there's a similar sound that they have, and they're even similar lyrics that they might use that work for them, you know, and that's, or phrasing. So if you've got someone else there with you that's different to you, there's different phrasing, there's different lyrics, there's different content that they'll throw at you, and that's when you really start getting some great stuff. And I did some great co-writing with some, you know, just a good song for these guys, and the EP has probably the best review since Feel Does. So something's working really well there with that. And it's been, for me, it's obviously been successful. So that's, you know, a great one. And I'll continue to do it because I really enjoy that. And I think I probably got a bit sick of my own sound for a while, and just writing, I got a bit bored with sitting there on my own and doing stuff. So it was really nice to go in a room, we've got to write a song today. We've got to get done. And that's it. It's got to finish it. And you do. You get done.
Just taking a moment away from Pete Murray's fabulous tale to talk to you about a bit of economics and a bit of cross promotion. So I might need to plan out in a moment, but before I do, I'd love to talk to you about Idol Australians, which is a new podcast that I'm making with James Matheson. Jimmy the Sandstorm Matheson and I have returned to the fold, and it is an absolute cracker to be making a show with Jimmy. We are covering all kinds of things across the wide breadth of our remit, which is, look, let's just look into the bits of history and culture that we might have kind of let slip through the cracks here in Australia. This week we spoke with Peter Alexander, the extraordinary Peter Alexander. He's really freaking cool, man. And we had a really good chat with him. And I think the thing I'm really digging the most, actually, is just because James and I have been mates this whole time. But, you know, so many people don't realize that we stayed friends and we still talk all the time. And I just really love having a chat and a catch up with Jim. And clearly, James is also very happy that we are making a show again together too. Have a listen.
I love we're doing a show, you know.
Yeah.
It's different to other shows that we've done. Lots of shows have, you know, writers and researchers and producers and floor managers and audio technicians and assistant directors and their shows. That's a show.
Yeah.
This has some show-like elements.
What I would dearly love to have is pyro, because I know that there was always a fun time when you and I were on a show that had pyro or at least a confetti cannon. You can find Idol Australians wherever you found this podcast, IDLE Australians, and enjoy that chat with Peter Alexander. Right, we'll get back to Pete Murray in just a tick. If you hear an ad here, thanks for helping me pay the bills. If you don't hear an ad, here's some more Pete.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've got to hand it to you, Pete, like from the young man that pulled the U-turn and drove back to Dooley's on the night that you were too afraid to do it, to the guy who's sitting here who's like so nervous, he's like, I'm going to co-write, but I'll write all of it. I want to have it. To be aware of that, just to know that you have that and go, I'm just going to challenge this thing that is my body's wanting me to do this, but I'm just going to challenge this and know I'll be okay. That takes a lot. A lot of people never get there, Pete. So I've got to give you credit for that, man.
Yeah, thanks, man. Yeah, thanks. Well, look, I think we fear things. That's the thing. I wrote song Opportunity about that. That song is so inspirational for a lot of people because it's about changing your life. If you're unhappy, find the exit, get out of it and change it because it'll be worth it for the change. And one of the biggest things in that was like the fear of possibility that we have. It's like, what that can be, but what's going to, it's going to change now. Like, I'm too scared to do that. Even though I might not be that happy, I'm going to stay here because it's safe. And we stay in the safety zone. But life's about challenging yourself and doing something that's different and putting yourself out there. And if you fail, then you've got to learn from that. And then you try and do something again. You know, that's the thing. Don't think because you fail that you're a failure. To be successful, you have to fail. And that's where you learn from the mistakes and you'll be better at it. So that's the whole thing. You know, I think being scared, then look, I get scared too, you know, to do that. I got scared to songwrite with these guys. And now it's like, okay, now I'm not scared. But I was, and, you know, to even play at Dooley's at night, I was petrified, but I did it, and then it gets easier. It's like a job that you do. I'm sure the first interview you ever did, you would have been petrified, nervous. What are my questions? You know, what's next? And, you know, it's just now, look at you. You know, like you do this so easily because you've done it for so long, but you get over those fears and things just happen.
I still get nervous, Pete. Don't worry. I still get nervous. I just kind of try and use that energy as a signal to be like, oh, here we go. Ready? The house lights have gone down. Let's on. It's game time.
Well, you're good at it. So, you know, that's the thing. And so, you know, there's been years of practicing. You know, you've got to step out of that comfort zone. You're on TV. You know, TV is a pretty challenging thing. Like when the camera goes on, it's like, all right, you're on. It's scary, you know. So that scares a lot of people, that sort of thing. So whatever anyone's doing, taking them out of their comfort zone is going to be a challenging thing. But just kind of do it and be okay if it does fail and get back and have it back again.
Do you try and instill this in your kids?
Absolutely. I've always been believing you can do anything you want. You know, there's nothing that you can't do if you really put your mind to it and have those, you know, start to write your goals down, what you want to achieve. Obviously, I mean, yes, there are some things you can't do, but, you know, we're kind of being realistic. You know, when you write your goals down, you can really achieve a lot more than what you think. And, you know, I used to write my goals down. I still do. Like some of the boys there too, like, you know, write these things down and they'll come through, they'll happen. It will happen if you keep reading it and if you keep doing the right work or what you need to do to make it happen. So here's my goal. Then here's a list of things that I need to do to achieve that. But I think I need to do to achieve that. And that's when you start to go, okay, if you're not doing them, it's not going to happen. You must keep, you've got to keep doing it. Keeps you kind of focused on what you need to do to be successful. And it's really, goal setting is a really important thing. Small steps, small goals, you know, and then big ones as well. So you, where do you want to be later? But right now, I've got to achieve these sorts of small things because if you set a big goal and you go, oh, I didn't get that, that's a big one. That's going to take a bit of time to get there. You're just going to feel deflated and, oh, what am I doing this for? So it's small goals to sort of get you where you want to be. Setting out your life, you know, what I remember years ago after Dad died, it was a big thing for me. You go, what do I want to do? Because Dad worked his whole life. He had sold his business. Mum and Dad bought a caravan and they were about to travel around Australia. So he was, and they were going to move to the Sunshine Coast. That was where they were going to kind of semi-retire. Dad was going to pick up some more work at the Sunshine Coast, but they were going to spend 12 months, go around Australia. And he sold the business and he worked for this guy that bought his business for 12 months. He finished and 1 month later died. So for me, I was like, that's not going to happen to me. I'm going to make sure that I live my life. This is about lifestyle. It's not about being, you know, the richest person in the world. Or, you know, don't need to be greedy. So it's about lifestyle and what I want to do to stay happy. And that's the thing for me. I really thought about that. I don't want to work for someone else. I don't want to be working on an hourly rate because you're just trapped to that and you're limiting yourself what you're going to be paid. So don't put limits on what you're going to be paid and what you can achieve. You want to be, hey, this is whatever is going to happen. It's going to happen, but I want to be free. I want to travel the world. I want to do these things. So what am I going to do that's going to make that happen? It did take me a little while to work that out, but once I worked it out, it was all made sense, you know. So, but it, once again, it's in those early days of early 20s. I thought we could do that time, really. But for me, it was in those early days of really working out what I wanted and what I didn't want to happen. Like I said, what happened to Dad? What didn't want to happen? So that, I was angry about that. I was angry that he didn't get to, I was angry he was gone. I was angry that he didn't get to enjoy his life after working so long.
You sound like someone who, and it's amazing you get your kids to do it, to write these things down and go, just have a look at it and remind yourself every day of which direction you're going. We all had a lot of goals this time last year, and then we all had to go, okay, we're not going anywhere. No one's going anywhere. You're not going on tour. I'm not making TV. How did you find the moment where you're like, I'm just going to have to let all this go, and I'm just going to have to be with not knowing how it's going to end, and I'm just going to have to hang around there? How did you find the lockdowns that we went through in 2020?
I had recorded The Night, the EP. That was pretty much in the bag, and I was thinking of just getting mixes done. So that was finished. So it was hard to go, what do I do? Because normally you tour it and you promote it, and that just wasn't going to work. So that had changed a lot. So we pushed the dates back pretty much by 12 months, like everyone did. So 12 months, I just basically went, okay, what do we do now? You know, and we've been talking with management about what we do, and I end up, my management, fantastic. We started thinking about, there's a couple of opportunities came up with doing a song for an ad, and there was a Kmart ad, and they wanted to do Everlasting Love, I think it's called. Open up your eyes, everlasting love. They wanted that version. So my manager did push for me to do that. So it's like, let's do that. You've got to start to look at different ways that you can do that. Now, probably years ago, I would have gone, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing a cover of someone else's song for an ad. But, you know, when COVID hit, everything was out the door. And, you know, trying to be a cool person, it's just like you've got to earn money. You've got to keep things going. So
kids are hungry.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, you know, that happened. And that was good for me to do that. You know, we started to do things like that. They're just a little bit different, that I couldn't tour. So what do we do? As far as being home and with family, I loved it. It's great because being a musician, you're on the road so much and you're away. And, you know, to have the time at home with the kids at that time, I loved it. It was great. And I think all musicians that I spoke to, we were missing the live touring, but we loved being home with family. So that was the best thing about it. But, you know, just I think once again, reevaluating what you had to do, and then you suddenly, you know, at home teaching the kids and looking at their homework and trying to help them out and trying to understand how you do maths again, you know, because maths is all different now, the way they teach the kids compared to what we were doing. So all these different challenges that come your way.
Did it make you change the things that you wrote down as far as goals? For me, it made me go, what am I doing all this for again if I'm missing all this stuff all the time? Like, it made me think about things differently.
Yeah, we just basically pushed everything back. And so I thought, look, I spent the time in the studio a little bit more, really trying to work on the second EP that's about to come out or be coming out soon. So I spent time getting that together. And just kind of also we pushed the release back. So I was looking at extra things I could do for the Night EP as well. How do I make that better? So I was more time trying to get the songs right so they could be the best that they could be. And just really sort of waiting to fire 12 months later when we come out with that, with the shows. So that's really just pushing things back.
And as far as what you want out of life and as far as what you do it all for, did the time spent at home change that?
Well, we're having our fourth child, so that's changed a few things.
Four? Holy moly, we got two on flat stick. So,
yeah, so, you know, like, we talked about that. We planned that, the fourth child, and so we're kind of looking at that now, with dealing with before how we worked that out. We're only 2 weeks away from having a baby.
Wow.
We built ourselves a barn a little while ago, just kind of we've moved into that, and we're about to rent about a house. So the timing couldn't be worse for this whole thing. You know, having a baby, living in the barn, it's kind of like when Jesus was born, you know, it's sort of in the... out in the barn, although it's a pretty nice barn, so thanks.
Yeah, the classic Grand Designs episode. You're like, you've moved into the shed and the back of the property. The baby's right. Going to come halfway through construction.
I know. But the old house, we need to do something with it. So my wife's set up, the kitchen's bad. We need a new kitchen. So
it'll be great. Fourth time around, how are you feeling with the baby on the way? How do you feel?
Yeah, look, it's still exciting for me. I think my two oldest boys, Charlie and Pedro, are now 17, and Pedro's nearly 14. So they're really doing their own thing. I've got a close bond with those boys, and my little daughter now has three, and another little bub coming. I don't know what it's going to be, a boy or girl. I've never found out. I like not knowing with the kids. It's exciting. But I think just doing it again with two little ones again, because it's so exciting with the kids, and I found, I loved when they're kids and growing up. It's just such a great part of your life. I remember thinking, like, gosh, if I didn't have kids, like, they'd be older, and you kind of, what do you do with yourself? You know, you just kind of focus on yourself more. But, you know, kids and your family are the most important thing in your life, as you would know. And that's where your real happiness is, you know, when you're with them. So, you know, we're all getting excited about it. I think even the boys, too, they're sort of hoping for a boy because they want to do boys' things together with the boy. You know, we're such and kind, you know, a girl, dolls, and, you know. So, look, I think it's just an exciting time for us to do that. And I've always wanted to have more than two kids because mum and dad, we just had two kids, as myself and my sister. And when dad died, we felt like such a small family. And that's another reason why I wanted to have more than just two kids. So it's funny what you go through, isn't it, you know, in life that makes a change and do what you do.
Oh, Pete, I could talk to you all day, man. I'm really grateful I had the chance to talk to you today. I'm really grateful we managed to connect today. And, Jesus, could Blues Vest actually happen once?
I was dirty on that. And it's tough because, you know, as everyone's aware, you've got the Blues Fest, you know, 15,000 people at a big venue, all outdoors, got cancelled 24 hours beforehand. But then you've got, you know, in Brisbane where the virus came from, the footy's on and there's 30,000 people going to a stadium. You're all going to the toilet at the same time. You're all going to get food at the same time. You're all going from public transport to there and from. What's the difference? I don't think the government understand what the music festival, especially the Blues Festival, it's not like young kids running around off their head drunk. You know, it's like people, it's a mature crowd. Everyone's kind of really will do what they have to do. I mean, if they put something in place where you wear masks or no dancing, people stick to it. You know, I just did a bunch of festivals called By the Sea. We had 8,000 people at Cronulla. And people sat down, people were really good with the rules and there's no cases for, you know, COVID. So we can do it. It's just stop panicking and let it happen. I felt sorry for the food vendors, the guys there that went out and bought all their food and then suddenly 24 hours later, they go, oh, sorry.
Yeah. People don't really spare a thought for the kind of traveling circus of people who support those festivals and they just go from one to the next to the next to the next, from the toilet people to the fence people to the, like, they just live their whole life on the road doing that stuff. And there's so many jobs in that industry that rely on live venues and live entertainment that have just gone. It'd be interesting to see how it recovers. But look, as soon as Blues Fest gets the green light, mate, I can't wait to go back because I love Blues Fest and I certainly hope it can, because Wolfie will be old enough, you know. I've got the backpack and everything for him so he can sit and see above everybody.
Nice. Oh, yeah. It's a great festival. I love it too. So hopefully we can get it happen, mate.
Yeah. Be really good, man. All right. Look, congratulations. Good luck with everything. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me today, Pete.
Thanks for chatting, mate. Good to talk to you.
Ladies and gentlemen, there is Pete Murray. Thank you for listening to the show. You can find Pete Murray and great photos of Pete Murray cradling his new baby in his giant python-like arms. The guy's ripped. What can I tell you? He's handsome, he's a beautiful singer-songwriter, and, you know, he looks good holding babies. Pete Murray Music is where he is on Instagram. You can also listen to his new EP. It's called In the Night. I popped a link in the show notes. Enjoy that. Wherever you are in the country, we're on the, I don't know, by the time you hear this, you know, Sydney might be locked down. We're in COVID town. I've had two swabs in the last week. Clear. All right. Spent 2 hours in the car waiting for my swab yesterday, but that's the right thing. We've got to do the right thing. We've got to try as hard as we can to do the right thing. And for goodness sake, if I could get a vaccine appointment quicker than a couple of weeks away, I would. Got to try my best to get that done as well. All right. Look after yourself. I'll talk to you on Thursday with Jimmy on Idol Australians, and Friday I'm back here. So thanks heaps. Enjoy the Pete Murray EP. It's pretty great. Until we speak next, sleep well. and dream of beautiful things.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.